All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again on the main feed. Dom, a thrilling episode here today that I, once again, I'm kind of surprised we've never thought to do it before.
Yeah, we don't know if it's going to be thrilling because we haven't done it yet, so let's hold our horses on that one. But I love the optimism there. Let's aspire to make that a reality.
It just seems like such an obviously good topic that I'm excited to dive in, although you are potentially very right that I may be counting my chickens before they hatch here. But we are back to get into the all-time Survivor confessionalist draft. Not individual confessionals that are memorable, as it is more commonly known, but individual players who, over the course of their careers, have provided us with the most consistent entertainment in the confessional department, Dom. And before we dive into the draft itself, let me begin by asking you, because this is surely going to be a topic that is highly subjective, and we're probably going to irritate some people with some of the people with some of the contestants who are not drafted here today, but what for you makes someone stand out in your mind as a great confessionalist?
I've been thinking over this today, and I found it surprisingly hard to actually distill that down into a good answer, because there are so many contestants who I love having on my screen because they're just pleasing to listen to. You know, they always they have something fun to say, or just something about their voice or their manner or whatever it is. There's a certain charisma about them. It's just fun to have them on the screen, and I would literally listen to them recite the phone book. But listening to someone recite the phone book, whichever way you slice it, makes for a bad confessional. So I think there are many people who are good confessionalists, and yet I could not tell you anything about a single one of their confessionals over their entire Survivor run. So you know, Malcolm maybe comes to mind as an example, or you know, various people who just hold you in with their manner of speaking, but what they're speaking often, you know, is nothing to write home about. So I think there's something to break down there between who kind of performs well in confessional, and maybe that's where this debate over how authentic does it have to be comes into the mix, versus I just like hearing this person talk, and a confessional is a good place to hear them talk. So let's sign up for more of that, please.
Yes, I too have spent some time thinking about this, and for me, and this will probably be reflected in the picks that I make, and again, a highly subjective kind of category here in the first place that we're going to be getting into, but as far as I am concerned, the names that really jump out at me are the people who are funny, first of all. That is going to go a long way with me, and it helps for sure if people are like insightful and concise and shedding light on what is going on around them. And another thing that you actually flagged up that I do think is pretty important for me, although I could see myself making some picks that are not necessarily the most in line with this, is people seeming authentic. I think getting that charismatic sense from people is often a byproduct of me not feeling like they are putting on a show for me, and that they are honestly delivering their true thoughts about what is going on around them and not mugging for the camera or trying to make good TV or whatever. But again, I'm very concerned already off the bat, if it's not clear, that others listening to this podcast are obviously going to have criteria of their own, but that's totally irrelevant here today, Dom. We are the two who are going to be drafting this, and I think it frankly makes sense to be going back and forth rather than doing a snake draft where anyone's making consecutive confessionalist picks. Let's just alternate. And the only other thing that I wanted to flag up before we actually get into the draft itself is I did at least a light amount of my due diligence here and scrolled through the Wikipedia with the list of all the contestants that have ever played to make sure, hopefully, that I'm not forgetting about anyone too egregious along the way, and noticed a trend that, you tell me if you think there's something to this, but as I was scrolling through the Wikipedia, I feel like I noticed a pattern developing where when I would get to the seasons that are historically not remembered as the peak necessarily of all-time great Survivor seasons, it really seemed to me like lack of compelling confessionalists was a common trend there. And something at least I personally don't think I had actively noticed in the past, but I really do think at least some seasons along the way, have suffered dearly as a result of not really having super entertaining people in the confessional department.
I think there certainly is something to that, and if anything, it may be the main determinant of how engaging a season is for me, where even if the game itself has a lot to recommend it on that season, the main conduit that you experience that through is what people say about it, right? And maybe you have some fantastically entertaining tribal council, and that, you know, even though no one is saying anything themselves, you know, the vote speaks for itself. But for the most part, it's going to be people giving their insight about the game and the personal drama that's unfolding around them. And if you have no one who can render that in an interesting way, then it's almost like even if the game itself has is the wildest thing you've ever seen, then how are you going to know about that necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the kind of ensemble nature of a cast really does have to play a role there. And it doesn't have to be everyone working in harmony. I mean, often the best confessionals are someone taking that private moment to vent their spleen about someone who just rubs them the wrong way, and they really could stand to lose as soon as possible. But you could take someone who you think of as a good confessionalist and put them in, you know, a different season with different people in a different situation, and you wouldn't really hear as much from them. And when you did, it wouldn't be as interesting. And often I think it is that kind of desperation almost, or frustration, that leads to good confessionals. Or from the other side, you know, if someone really feels like they're on top of the world, they're about to bamboozle someone, then that can lead to some nice sound bites as well. But there has to be something going on, and I think the confessionals do rely on the action itself to keep things moving. And so, you know, there are going to be people who don't make this list who in some other universe, I think, we might remember in more glowing terms here. But, you know, so it goes.
I definitely think that is a very fair point. Now, Dom, let's dive in here. And I will preface this by saying I know who I would take with the number one overall pick, but I also know how much you like sniping me when it comes to these draft picks. So I am going to reverse free roll myself here very hard and announce to you, I will be disappointed if I don't get this person on my team, but I will offer you, if you would like it, the first overall pick in the draft, just to see if you can do it to me.
To be clear, are we looking at voting confessionals as part of this mix here, or are we treating those as our own separate entity?
I think those are absolutely in play.
Okay, because there are people who, I guess, voting confessionals are more of a moment, right? Like, if you remember a voting confessional, it's, oh, I remember this person at that tribal council because they just nailed it, or they really just tore someone apart in the privacy of the voting booth, versus what I was mentioning before, this kind of a ambient enjoyment of a confessional, where I have no idea what you just said, but I sure enjoyed hearing you say it, right? So maybe some different skill sets at work there. I will give you the first overall pick, but I think I know who it's going to be.
Okay. Well, you tell
me. I will announce on your behalf that headlining your board here, I imagine, is going to be one Sandra Diaz-Twine.
Incorrect. Although,
wow. Okay.
Not the worst shot in the dark there. I do think Sandra is someone who will probably come up along the way over the course of this draft, but the number one person for me that I would just find myself so heartbroken if I did not have them on my all-time confessionalist list. My confessional list. Sorry.
Let's keep it moving.
Yes. Someone who very squarely fits into my three main criteria of being funny, insightful, and authentic. Number one on my board, Dom, Ceree Fields, I feel like is an all-timer, to say the absolute minimum as far as the confessional game is concerned.
What would you say are some of your favorite iconic Ceree confessionals then across her four seasons?
So the one that I can never get out of my mind, and it's so funny to me that it's now causing me to forget all of the other ones that I'm sure everyone is screaming at their phone or whatever they're listening to this on, is when she's talking about Ozzy and Amanda in Micronesia and says something to the effect of like, man, if they're not careful, they're going to have a bunch of little Ozlets running
yes.
around here. I love that so much. But just every single Ceree confessional, particularly the Ceree giggle in confessionals, I think is what really puts it over the top for me, is her coming across, as I said, Dom, is so just authentic and in on the joke 24/7, would be devastated if I did not have Suri on my team. So thank you for foregoing the opportunity to steal that from me.
Well, you're welcome. And with Suri, I think it really is a case of it's so much more about the vibe that she gives off. And as you said, that trademark Suri giggle, much more so than any actual words that she has ever uttered in the context of Survivor.
I am with that, I guess. And it is I think that is a key element in something you flagged up, just the charisma. I feel like she brings to a potentially unrivaled extent, although who knows, but there are a ton of strong candidates here on the short list that I have crafted. And actually, before we go much further, let's establish how many people we're going to be drafting, because we have not discussed this ahead of time. I actually think that there are enough that we could probably go 10 each, if that sounds doable to you.
Okay, right. I'd be down.
Suri is off the board at number one.
So with Suri, in Micronesia in particular, the one confessional that naturally stands out is that that move to get rid of Eric when all four of the women left in the game contribute to that in a big way. But what's so hilarious about that is Suri, Parvati, and Natalie all are just stunned. They're absolutely gobsmacked. And so they all they're not really in the frame of mind to give some perfectly rehearsed apposite soundbite, but they're just giving their authentic reactions in the moment. So Cerise, I think, is one of the most compelling of those, where she's like, you know, my mother always told me you can't beat them with these all the time. You're pointing to her guns, but you can always beat them with this. And that's just so great for the moment. And then Amanda gets up and just gazes into the distance and just goes, you know, just trails off into nothing. And yet somehow that is the most appropriate, most Amanda-ish response to that moment, right? Like, I would almost be upset with her if she had anything more substantial to say there.
Yes, I think that is a very apt observation, that they were probably at least close to unprepared for that actually coming in. I would be very curious to know what the other four involved in that tribal council who were not Eric would have set as the line that he would actually give up immunity there. But a brilliant confessionalist, both on the in the conventional sense and also for sure in tribal council voting confessionals there. So Suri, number one off the board. I couldn't be more excited about the way my team is already shaping up. So Dom, let's see how you respond to that.
Okay, so one reason I was so happy to give you the first pick is that I really was at a loss to know who I was going to choose myself. And I'm going to take a very different approach. I'm going to take someone who is funny and often insightful, but maybe not quite in the way they intend, and as inauthentic as it is possible for one man or one god to be. Give me Coach Wade, Colin.
I don't dispute the merits of this pick by any stretch. I wasn't sure where Coach would ultimately go, and he was the person I had in mind when I was talking about authenticity perhaps going out the window for me over the course of this draft, if he was going to remain on the board for too long, because Coach absolutely someone I believe belongs in this conversation. I do still wonder about just for lack of a better word, because I'm very bad with synonyms, the authenticity behind Coach's confessionals, because I would at least allege that at the very least in Token Sheens, while he was certainly putting on a show in many ways and would continue to do so across all of his seasons, I did get the vibe that plenty of his confessionals that we viewed as like hilarious, albeit unintentionally, were in his mind totally authentic.
And that's part of the majesty of the Coach Wade experience, right? But one thing, I think with Coach, those lines are maybe blurred more than they are with some people, where, you know, Coach is always a character, right? He always is larger than life, has some like wacky, zany things to say. But at some point, when that literally is who you are and how you think, then that performance becomes an extension of your character. You know, Coach is better at performing that character than basically anyone else would be. And he's better at performing that character than he is at performing others, right? That is a very Coach, output, if you like. Whereas I don't know if Coach could pull off the conniving gay bot thing as easily, which is part of what makes South Pacific in turn so fascinating too, where he kind of finds himself forced into that role and trying to play into that to some degree, but can't do it. And that mismatch between his personality and his actions is what makes that season so fascinating, but in such a, you know, it's not in the kind of lighthearted, look at this idiot way that Token Jeans was. It's much more of a kind of dark, tragic storyline.
I'm now thinking about like classic Coach confessionals and wondering if I'm like Mandela affecting myself here. Was the, and you, I think you are a bigger favorite to remember the exact word choice here, the like unbreakable, immovable, whatever. Yes. Was that a confessional or was that him talking to a group?
I want to say that was part of the
or tribal
the
council?
Big Exile Island monologue.
Okay. All right. If that was a confessional, that would be the one that would stand out in my mind. But unfortunately, to potentially argue strongly against my own point there, I'm not exactly sure on the context of that whole thing. But yeah, Coach, I think a very fine pick here as the captain, dare I say, coach of your squad here. So there goes Coach off the board at number two. And I'm honestly torn between several different directions here, and will acknowledge that I think this next pick may not be the literal next person on my list if I were to just rank everyone in the dark, but it is the person that I am the most concerned about not making it back to me, and I will certainly have no issue taking them off the board here with my second pick. I think I would still probably stand by the take that, gun to my head, this person is the funniest person who has ever played Survivor. Give me Tyson Apostle. I feel like, again, authenticity may be a little a bit of an issue here, but being deliberately inauthentic and like kind of playing a character for the cameras, I think is kind of the authentic version of Tyson, and like that deliberate irony that he puts into everything, I think is kind of true to his character at a certain point.
Tyson is an interesting one here because he and Coach have in some ways quite similar three season story arcs, and you know they play two of those seasons together, so how could they not? But naturally it ends in quite different ways, where Tyson ends up mastering that game bot approach. He learned at the feet of Boston Rob and was able to emulate that to get his own $1 million at the end, Coach falling tragically short at the final hurdle. But both of them, the criticism of them as a character in both of their final iterations was they seemed like they were just having less fun. And you would think, especially in Tyson's case, where like you're going on to win the season and you finally complete the dream, win $1 million, you would be having all the fun in the world, right? But I think it's just because they have to be the headline act and the henchman for their alliance, they can no longer be the court jester, right? They can't be the object of ridicule if the whole point of the story is you have to take them seriously. And so I'm sure that Tyson in Blood versus Water was giving the same the same heat in his confessionals that he was the first two times, but we just see less of it because that's not his assigned role for once in his life.
And I think that's too bad. I think Blood versus Water, at least potentially for my money, would have been better served by Tyson kind of maintaining that same character that we saw the first two times, more accurately really saw the first time and then a little bit of on Heroes versus Villains. But when we were doing our Heroes versus Villains rewatch podcast over on the Patreon feed, one of the things we talked about was what a crime it was that Tyson got so little airtime during that season. But to return to your larger point, I think you are right that probably if Tyson had gotten like any other result, we would have seen less of the heroic Tyson and a lot more of the Tyson that I think we were used to and many people were expecting. And I now actually kind of feel robbed that I think the best case scenario for Tyson on a season is Tyson is a losing finalist where he goes the distance, but they still are willing to include him being really like cutting and sarcastic as often as possible in the confessionals.
What I want to see is Tyson as that underdog person who like goes on a late challenge run and falls just short, finishes in, you know, in fourth or fifth. And that kind of frees him up to be whatever character he wants to be, both within the game and also in confessionals as well.
Yeah. So Tyson off the board now, number 3 overall, number 2 on my team. Dom, it is back over to you.
Okay, so I wasn't sure where to go here, and for my next person, I think he is, if this were a top narrator draft, then he would be maybe this high up on the board, but a much more secure pick. I'm going to take Jonathan Penner, but I don't know if that's even fair to him or to my board here, because how much of that is tied up in confessionals versus he's just a fun guy to listen to, you know, whether it's yelling at Jeff in challenges, which you know, is maybe his crowning moment, or, you know, like, is he a good confessionalist, or is he just good at talking, and, you know, that the rest of that speaks for itself?
So that's a question that I've had, and I will say I don't think Penner would have been quite this high for me, but certainly someone I would have been considering later on. You could be dead right that he would be a standout confessionalist if we were only shown Survivor confessionals. But I do at least have concerns that some of the general Penner persona is potentially bleeding into this pick, although I don't disagree with your analysis of Penner in general, which is he is a fascinating guy just to hear talk about anything in whatever context.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So Penner off the board at number 4. I guess what I'm saying, Dom, is that pick is bollocks.
And you know it.
But we will move it along now. My 3rd overall pick, man, I am really torn, and I don't want to play just right into your hand in terms of criticisms I know you will lodge at me if I go in a certain direction, so I will not go there. I think now, actually, is the time, and I frankly think this may be a little late for this person to come off the board, but your prediction is finally coming in, Dom. I will take Sandra with my next pick here, and I certainly am aware of the things that we, not just me, have said about Sandra over the years as things pertain exclusively to the strategic element of Survivor, but I have at least attempted to, whenever flagging up those kind of concerns / criticisms, be very clear. I believe Sandra is an all-time elite Survivor character who is very worthy of that sort of reputation in the grand scheme of things, and absolutely happy to have Sandra on my team here. And non-ironically, and I don't know who's going to believe me, I doubt you're going to believe me, but I promise this is in no way any kind of pandering whatsoever. Sandra could be as high as number 3 on my board overall, I think.
I will say, in all the time that I've known you, you have been steadfast and consistent in your views of Sandra throughout, and those have always been not a fan of her game, love her as a character, love her as a confessionalist. So you are unimpeachable on that front.
All right. I am very happy to hear you back that up, and the laundry list of iconic Sandra confessionals is too much for I say it's too much for one podcast. That actually wouldn't be the worst podcast idea, to kind of extend the olive branch and just roll through an entire episode of things we really have enjoyed about Sandra over the years. I frankly, like,
that can be the 10-year anniversary special or the 1000th episode or whatever it is.
So I mean, to potentially tip my hand a little bit, like, I think I have way more positive things to say about what Sandra brings to Survivor than I do about Boston Rob, who is the other guy I get a ton of shit for being too mean to over the years. I think Sandra completely delivers every single season she's on in this capacity, even when she's relegated to just being essentially a coach out there on season 39. I still thought she was highly entertaining all along the way there. So genuinely, non-ironically, very happy to have Sandra on my team here, and somewhat surprised that she ended up falling all the way to number 5 overall.
Should I expect to see Boston Rob himself appear in this draft for you?
I guess we'll have to find out, Dom.
Well, sure. Okay. Before I make my next pick here, one thing occurred to me, because one other thing that we had been brainstorming on the same sheet that we used for everything was you know, who the most underrated winner is in the year of our Lord 2021. And when I was just absentmindedly scrolling through, I confused that list for the kind of preliminary list of who the best confessionalist might be. But it got me thinking how much overlap you might expect to see between those lists? Like, is there some argument that usually the better confessionalists tend to have a certain level of, you know, self-awareness or awareness of their surroundings that's going to serve them well in the game and maybe propel them to victory? Or is that a reach in your mind?
Oh, I don't think that's necessarily a reach, but I did, when brainstorming the actual list of people that I thought were all-time great confessionalists, have a similar observation, which was there seemed to be a lot of people that either won or went very far that I felt like came to mind right away. And I think a huge obvious reason for that is they were on the show longer and had more opportunities for confessionals. And based on the picks that we have made to this point, we are 5 picks into this draft and no one we have taken thus far has played fewer than 3 times, with several 4-timers already off the board. And so I do think sample size and the opportunity to give a bunch of good confessionals is an element certainly worth acknowledging, but you may be onto something even further there, Dom, which is being a good speaker and an observant person lends itself very well to both confessionals and the game Survivor itself.
Yeah, the sample size thing really can't be overlooked either, I think, because even if you believe, as you understandably do, that Sandra is one of the all-time great confessionalists, once you've played that many times, surely at some point along there, including 2 like full season runs, you should have some like some good sound bites, some memorable moments and quotes in there. Because if you don't, then you're languishing probably in the worst confessionalist of all time list. You know, if your hit rate over that long a sample is 0. But I do wonder how much of our fond memories of some of these characters is just familiarity once it gets to a certain point, right? And that also is something that feeds on itself. Where does Ceree come back to play 4 times because, you know, just because someone has to? No, it's because it's Ceree and people love Ceree, and they love Ceree because she's a really engaging character who somehow manages to have the perfect underdog story while also just being an absolute boss in the game itself. Like, so all of that does you know, perpetuate itself to some degree, but it is worth thinking about. You know, none of this is devoid of context, right? A lot of it is they've been on our screen so much that their best moments stick out, and their worst moments, well, they're not even that bad. They're just the same forgettable whatever as everyone else has for the majority of their Survivor careers.
Yeah, I think there are probably going to be some old school Survivor fans who are going to be upset. I don't want to count too many chickens before they hatch here, but like, I think it is very possible that if people like Greg from Borneo or Dina, or the one who came to mind to me that I feel like would be a Hall of Fame confessionalist, and this is going to sound like it's so far out of left field, but Amy O'Hara from Guatemala cracked me up every time she was in confessionals. It's just the small sample size, I think, is going to probably prevent me from picking her. And there are a laundry list of people that I think fit that same criteria of if they had either played on multiple seasons or gone further on their one and only season, or just played on a more recent season, I think they would potentially be taken here today. But because of how much time has passed or how relatively little we got to see from them in their one season, it may be a bit of a stretch to be taking them in the all-time confessionalist draft. But we'll see. I think it will be a big-time testament to anyone who ultimately gets picked who only played once and it was a long time ago.
Amy O'Hara is going to crush the all-time Boston Accents draft, I'll tell you that much now.
Absolutely, yes. I definitely did do somewhere along, it must have been in Cagayan, where I think it was at least probably in Cagayan, I did a top 5 baby segment of the best Boston accents because I loved Trish's Boston accent so much. And if I didn't include Amy O'Hara in that, which I absolutely may not have, that was a massive oversight.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's finally time for me to get this rolling again and add someone to my board. I'm going to take I think the consensus best confessionalist of all time, which you would expect from someone this high up, but maybe I think the least controversial pick on this whole board, and that's Courtney Yates, who I am less of a fan of in those terms than some others are, I think. You know, I've said this before, but I think there are a lot of people who imagine that they would be the corny when actually they're the Denise, right? They are the person that the corny is entertaining the audience by tearing apart verbally behind their back. And some of what she said, like, it was somewhat mean-spirited, or like the... Well, I mean, sure, but like, I'm thinking about stuff like the Todd sister miscarriage thing, which for me crossed the line at least, but just in terms of like overall hit rate, I mean, it's really hard to argue with Corny Yates.
I am totally with that, and I think there are probably plenty of listeners out there that are shocked Courtney has fallen this far, and she, I would suspect, would be number one on a lot of people's boards that are in the listening audience or otherwise that are not listening to this. I think Courtney could quite conceivably come out even higher than number six overall if RHAP were to pull a much larger sample size on the best confessionalists of all time, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And with Courtney now off the board.
And actually, I want one final thing on that is, we mentioned in our Heroes versus Villains coverage how top-heavy a lot of the confessional distribution was in that season. Tyson, who already is off the board, was another victim of that there. And Courtney, who, if you invite Courtney back, it's so that she can give great confessionals, right? Like, you don't expect that she's going to be skulking around in the woods hunting for idols. She's not going to be this incredibly cutthroat game player. What she is going to be is a big personality who can give amazingly cutting comments. And what's the point in inviting her back if she lasts long enough to give a bunch of those, and she's with a bunch of people on her tribe who would be the perfect targets for those? Like, we know that she was sounding off about them for sure, and yet they just don't show any of it. That, like, we said in our coverage there that was a real missed opportunity, and I completely stand by that.
Yeah, and now just looking at the six names that are off the board thus far, five of them were on the Heroes versus Villains cast, four of them were on the Villains tribe, and I think all four in Coach, Tyson, Sandra, and Courtney were people that when we were doing our rewatch, available for anyone interested over at patreon.com/DomandColin, you can get all the episodes there. I think they were all people that we talked about being surprised that we didn't hear more from along the way. So potentially doubling down on that take that we issued a few times over the course of those podcasts in this draft here today. But yeah, Courtney, actually, before we close on Courtney, I do want to say, while Courtney certainly was mean in many different situations, not only in confessionals and otherwise, I think it played much better than it does for other people because, and this is going to sound potentially weird, and I probably should be more careful about how I say this, it seemed authentic. It didn't seem like she was putting on a show and trying to go out of her way to be mean to people. It just seemed like she's hilarious, and that is her method of being funny, is tearing other people down, and it works.
I will confess that at the time, I was baffled that her and Steven could be a thing, right? Like, it seemed like such a... Yeah, of all the people who you would think that this incredibly acerbic confessionalist would be drawn to, you know, Steven is not on that list. But for some reason, that pairing worked. And for as far as I could tell, it's because that is not who Courtney is in real life. And I don't think Steven would be drawn to someone like that if that really is how they are most of the time. You know, by all accounts, the Courtney who people meet at charity events and who, you know, is just a normal person going about her life is a truly lovely person to be around. So I do wonder how much of it was put on and how much of it was just, oh, well, I'm young and kind of bratty, and also I'm out here and I'm starving, and all of the usual, not excuses, but just justifications that people understandably give on Survivor.
Well, I think Courtney sincerely did not care what the people on her seasons really thought of her or what the audience was going to think of her. And in real life, at least like the Courtney we see on social media, et cetera, I do think she is more careful about that sort of thing. And furthermore, Courtney is obviously in the kind of Twitter age that we're seeing these days, no longer a sassy 22-year-old waitress or whatever. And she's, matured a bit as a person, and that may have played a role there too. And then obviously not that we need to spend any more time on this, and I feel somewhat weird even getting further into the Courtney and Steven of it all here. I think Steven is someone who greatly appreciates someone who can like really barb him in a playful enough kind of way. I think as long as it is not explicitly mean-spirited, I do think he likes when people are willing to, for lack of a better term, kind of like talk back to him. I think he is into that sort of thing. So there goes Courtney Yates. Sorry to everyone who had her as the obvious number one, but she is finally off the board here as Dom's third team member, and it is back over to me. And I actually thought you were about to snipe my next pick, and I was going to both be mad and also give you credit for doing so. But another person that I feel like is a very safe pick at this point, and others are potentially wondering how he is still on the board. And I think this is a call that would, at least thus far, based on what I have been able to tell, withstand the test of time. When it comes to talking about Survivor in an entertaining way, particularly while playing on seasons of Survivor, how about Rob Cesternino? I feel like has got to be someone coming off the board very soon, so I'm very happy to have him here.
I do love how whenever Rob now talks about Survivor the Amazon, which he does not seem incredibly enthusiastic to relive, it's always with this kind of cringing at that former self, even though that former self is what catapulted him to stardom and so many people ended up falling in love with that character, right? It's just interesting how, you know, in the minds of so many, you are this, you permanently are fixed as this 25-year-old Survivor contestant. And Rob, more than anyone else, has had the chance to kind of evolve beyond that reputation in the minds of the people who know him as that, versus, you know, like, let's say Katie Gallagher, for example, who, you know, you watch her on Survivor Palau and you have this image of who she is, and 15 years later, that might still be your image of who she is, and you don't know if she's changed in the interim, as most people want to do in the course of 15 years. For Rob, it's, you know, he makes his name as this big character, and I think he definitely was leaning into that. And so coming back to the authenticity debate, he definitely was trying to play a character and succeeded, I would say. But he has had a chance to kind of reinvent that character, and it's been fun to see how the Rob now reacts to the Rob from back then.
Yes, and I may be forgetting people along the way here, and apologies if so, but the people who I think stand out as like massive statistical outliers in the confessional department are Boston Rob in Redemption Island, for pretty understandable reasons, Russell in Samoa, and potentially also in Heroes versus Villains, but more, much more so in Samoa, for very understandable reasons there. And I think it is the case, and please correct me if you know me to be wrong here, that Rob Cesternino in the Amazon is very, very high on the list of most confessionals by a single person in a single season, and to this day is in that same kind of territory that, as far as I remember, didn't really exist until, for the most part, much later on.
Yeah, and that's another thing that enters this conversation too. Back in the day, if someone was a big character, there was a limit to how big of a character they could be in like the pre-Russell Hands era. So even Coach in Token Teens, you could understandably get sick of Coach, and that his singular episode, the Martyr Approach, I think was the record in terms of visibility for a player on an episode up until that point. But you could still find other things to enjoy in the season if you were sick of Coach. Whereas in Samoa, for example, if you don't like Russell Hans as a character, well, that season is, you know.
See you for season 20. Oh, wait, just kidding. You'll probably want to skip that one too.
Yeah, just take the year off and come back for 21. So there are characters who I like, but I like in moderation. And even though I like the top of their range, so to speak, I love their best confessionals, that doesn't mean I want to hear every single generic, this is what happened at the challenge today confessional, be monopolized by that person. And that I think is a mistaken assumption that Survivor as a show has been making more and more recently. And this again comes back to that thing of, are you giving good confessionals or are you just a good narrator? And, you know, in the dark, it's good to have the better narrators narrate things more often. I totally understand that. But Tony is a good example, where Tony is at his wackiest and at his finest is a joy to watch. But Tony, when he's just giving a generic confessional is not really that much more interesting than anyone else. So why not take the chance to pull that off on someone else to be cynical about it?
Yeah. So I do also think Rob in the Amazon may have been an outlier in terms of, and maybe you would say that they should have gone this opposite direction. And I think there is an argument to be made, but like, what are you going to do? Give Butch and Matthew Von Ertfelde 7 confessionals per episode?
Yes. I mean, stay tuned for the Butch Lockley entry on this top 10 ranking. But that one is an extreme example. But there are seasons which I think succeed in part because the big end game players, for the most part, are all good confessionalists. And maybe there's not one of them that would crack the top 10 by themselves, but you get to the end and it's, oh, 4 out of the 5 people here can all carry a confessional by themselves. And that's great. That helps keep the season ticking, even if by the time we get down to final 7, final 6, we know how the game is going to play out from there.
I'm going to put a pin in this, hopefully remember to get back to it at the end of the episode. But I don't have an answer off the top of my head. Maybe you can just put me and the listeners out of our collective misery for when I forget to either return to this in the first place or do remember and still don't have a good answer. But as far as newbie seasons go, which stand out to you in terms of having that most balanced kind of end game cast where everyone can hold their own as confessionalists? Actually, I have an answer right off the top of my head.
I would say Borneo actually was, I don't know how much of Survivor's initial success or survival was dependent on, we get to the end and it's fun to watch Rich and Hatch and
Rich and Hatch,
Hatch and Rudy and Sue, and Kelly is also there, but Hatch and Rudy and Sue could all make a good bid for entries on this list by themselves, I think, if you extend it past the top 10. And having that kind of sparkling, you know, TV in the end game is really crucial to keeping that going.
So I wrote down maybe somewhere, I don't know, 25, 30 names or so, and Richard Hatch, Sue Hawk, and Rudy Bosch are all on that list for me. I think Borneo is a very good option there. I also think Kageyan probably stands out as having many, many people deep in the game that are outstanding in the confessional environment there. But yeah, Borneo, I think, is a great answer. And as we've said many times, I don't know if it was I have a very hard time chalking it up to just like a total fluke that the Borneo cast was as good as it was. Like, obviously they knew what they were doing when bringing that group together, but I still think the Borneo cast has got to be in the discussion for just the best cast they've ever assembled outside of returnees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we may see some Borneo names come off the list. It sounds like they may not be in Dom's top 10, so I can save them for later on. But I have a few of them in mind potentially to round out my roster here later on. I think, Dom, if I'm counting correctly, it is now back over to you for your fourth pick.
Wait, who did you just take?
I just took Rob Cesternino. Heard of him?
Oh, of course. No, I don't know her. So
is that your favorite? I feel like I see you use that GIF/GIF all the time. The Mariah Carey, I don't know her.
You're just blowing up my spot here. I would say that it's timeless, and it is, but I also do need to find a new joke at some point. So any suggestions, please write in, let me know. Until then, however, got to make a pick. So
can I actually, while you are in the tank on this pick, and I promise I don't mean this to be demeaning or condescending or whatever.
Oh, beautiful. Okay.
Yeah, that's always the great way to set up a question. Did you know that that was Mariah Carey? And is Mariah Carey like a name that registers with you as someone famous?
Anyway, so my next pick of this, well, look, I didn't know it was Mariah Carey, but obviously I know who Mariah Carey is. I'm not like, You do love doing this of when I don't know one thing, and so you extrapolate into I don't know anything, including things which you would like literally have to be living under a rock like a hermit not to have ever heard of. So
to me, it's like I'm trying to come up with a good parallel. Like, if there were some famous, I'm going to say GIF. I know other people get mad. Whatever, GIF is fine. If there were some GIF of Peyton Manning that you were constantly using, I obviously know you have heard of Peyton Manning, but I do find it interesting that you may not even know that it's a massively famous person that is in the GIF in question.
It is funny seeing that go in reverse from our, like, reality TV niche subculture, where the Alyssa Riley GIF just gets used constantly everywhere, and maybe 1% of people using it could tell you who that is.
Oh, I'm thinking of the Jesse spitting out the drink. Isn't that Jesse?
See, I assumed it was Alyssa, but clearly, case in point of no one actually knows who that is.
I'm pretty sure that's Jesse from BB15, maybe?
Mm-hmm. In any case, I will add to my board here. And for this pick, I think what my roster really needs at this point, we've got insanity, we've got snarkiness, we've got a lot. What we don't have is sheer volume. And so give me Chris Doxy on my board here.
Okay, friend of the podcast, Chris Doherty, coming off the board. I think that may be a name that surprises people, although I certainly am a fan of Chris. I think this may be the first name off the board that kind of fits the criteria we were talking about earlier of people who played once a long time ago are probably at a pretty serious disadvantage here, but I am totally with you personally that Chris, the sheer enthusiasm that Chris brought to pretty much every single confessional while he was on the show and interview after the show for however many years later it has been is very impressive and entertaining to me for sure.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, when we first spoke to Chris and we got him on the line, he sounded very muted to the point where I wasn't sure it was actually the right Chris or like if he was going through something and maybe this was a bad time and we should rearrange or whatever. But as we got more and more into him telling those anecdotes, he got fired up. And you saw, or actually you heard, some of that same Chris like really, really shine through. So yeah, I think he's someone who by and large is pretty, he's just a fairly mellow guy, but when he gets fired up, he really leads into it and he loves it, and you can tell that. And it's that enthusiasm that again, it's more about that than it is about anything that he said. But I God knows what he said. I don't know how the Vanuatu endgame exactly played out anymore, but Chris sure did, and he'll be happy to remind you at 120 decibels whenever you like.
Yeah, I am, Dom, looking at this GIF. I'm going to say GIF just to prevent people from being mad at me. And now that you have brought it to my attention that this might be Alyssa, I feel like I'm further away from figuring out who it actually is. And I'm going to try to find someone who can tell me the answer to this before we finish up this podcast here. But thank you for, at the very least, I don't think this is the Mandela effect necessarily, but I need to now know the answer. I've in watching this loop over and over, I cannot come any closer, and I am now being berated for not knowing the answer. Thank you, Kirsten, in real time here. But anyway,
look, I in your defense, I initially thought that was Danielle Murphy, so God knows why anyone would use her.
We have a conclusive word. It is Alyssa, and I'm a moron. Thank you, Kirsten, now finally.
So we have all lived in sin, Colin, and none of us are beyond reproach here.
I swear to you, I've spent the last whatever it is 6 or 7 years thinking that was Jesse from BB whatever, but regardless, glad to have that one cleared up, and now deeply embarrassed about stepping in to correct you on your initial assertion that that was Alyssa there. I swear, whatever.
I will say, I think Vanuatu is another of those seasons where you have not just Chris but also Twyla and Eliza, and I would put Amy in the mix, the great Rory Freeman, who sadly did not make it any further than he did, even Scout, who is the opposite both tonally and in many other ways of Chris and so on, but just that mix of characters and also the fact that a lot of them really did pop in confessionals. That's what made that season compelling to me, even though it's mostly been forgotten to time at this point.
Yeah, Twyla is frankly someone that I did not have written down here on my short list, and that was an oversight on my part. I would not scoff if you end up, or I end up, taking Twyla later on. So back over to me now, feeling, again, deeply ashamed, and now wondering what other people I think are in GIFs, and I can't believe that you haven't criticized me for berating you for not knowing Mariah Carey when I did not know this person on this season that I watched. Were they on the same season? Which season was Jesse on? Were they both on BB15?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I swear I remember that popping up during BB15, and I guess I just always thought it was Jesse, but apparently I'm an idiot. And I demand now that all future internet memes come with chyrons on the lower third so I don't embarrass myself on future podcasts. Either way, Dom, here we go. Four picks down for each of us at this point. Too busy being deeply embedded in the Jesse versus Alyssa controversy to even think about my next pick. So I will go, frankly, a direction I'm surprised I haven't gone yet. This is someone I think you are potentially about to give me a hard time for picking here, but I have, over the years, flagged up this person as one of my all-time favorite confessionalists. I feel like I'm getting incredible value here in selecting Parvati Shallow onto my squad. I suspect you are going to have your allegations about why I am such a Parvati fan in the first place, but like Sari, I feel like she is endlessly charming in her confessionals and has that same giggle that just gets me every time. Okay, here we go. Let me have, fine. Understood.
No. Okay. Try to think about how to respond to this. But basically, we have seen so much of Parvati, both when she is at the top of her game and also when she's really struggling within the game. And I feel like her good confessionals and frankly her good gameplay comes when she's in this prime position and is able to just kind of look down on the commoners beneath her versus, you know, when she's on the outs in Cook Islands or she's on the outs in Winners at War and actually seems kind of just zoned out of the whole experience in general. And at those times, you don't really get much to write home about from Parvati. So I don't know if that kind of conditionality affects her ranking here. Clearly it doesn't for you and never would for you, but for me, I kind of want to, you know, if someone is doing great, I want to see great confessionals about how well they're doing, and if they're doing badly, I want to see them fulminating in, you know, their own personal way about how badly they're doing. And I feel like I only get half of that at most from Parvati.
Okay, well, I will say that the bulk of her Survivor career is her in the position of power where she can look down on the common folk. And I think in that role, she is fantastic and hilarious and charismatic pretty much across the board. Maybe people at home will disagree with that, but I always find Parvati's confessionals very fun on rewatches. And it is certainly possible that I am giving Parvati too much credit, as I perhaps do from time to time, but she is someone that, if I were just making my own list of maybe just my own personal favorite confessionalists, she would probably honestly be higher than number 9 or wherever she has ultimately fallen here in this draft. But that may very well just be me. Either way, I personally, on my team, am very happy to have Parvati, although probably could have waited a little bit longer if I were to play this super tactically. So there goes Parvati. Dom, it is back over to you.
Okay, this is someone who I think we don't talk about as much as we maybe should outside of, you know, him limply yelling at his at his siblings. Give me Colby Donaldson, the pride of Texas himself.
So I actually sent out my shortlist to a friend of mine to see if there was anyone that was like an egregious oversight. And one of the people that she said was Colby, at least in Australian Outback. And I agree with that. I think Colby is potentially someone who would not have come to the average Survivor superfan's mind as a top 10 pick in this draft. But I definitely think Colby can deliver in confessionals. And even setting aside the Colby playing from the front and having a good time all along the way and being America's hero, etc., the pride of Texas and so forth, I actually think the most memorable Colby confessional for me, and honestly one of like the most memorable confessionals maybe of all time for me, is Colby when he's down and out near the end game of Heroes versus Villains, and they leave in the confessional where he talks about, like, I wanted to throw in the towel and just call it quits. And then he pauses for, like, a really long time, but they let that roll throughout. And then he, like, picks his head back up and continues. That really stands out to me. And this is actually not even necessarily specific to confessionals, but that kind of, like, almost like negative space. I'm sure there's a word for it when it's verbal rather than visual.
Silence.
So, thank you, Dom. But when you're expecting there to be pretty much no break in that sort of action, I think works wonders. Like, whatever episode it was of, I don't know, some season in the late 30s, maybe Edge of Extinction or somewhere in there. It may have been even further back, like Ko-Rong or whatever. But there's some episode that starts with just like 30 uninterrupted seconds or so of silence of people just like sitting around the campfire, totally destitute, if that's the right word, I think plays very, very well when the audience is so used to the opposite.
Yeah, top 10 silences on Survivor coming soon to a podcast.
Let's roll the clip.
Yeah.
This silence really stood out to me. All right. Colby, I think a very fine pick there, Dom. So back over to me halfway through the draft now, and actually making horrible time here, so we can probably speed it up a little bit in the back half of the draft. I think I will go for, you know what, I think I have to just go for pure narrator value every time this person gets cut to for a confessional. I feel like he delivers on all fronts. Give me Zeke here with the 11th overall pick here as we begin the second half of this draft. I struggle to come up with there are plenty of great Zeke confessionals. I guess the most memorable one that at least immediately comes to mind for me is talking about himself as like a very old person in a young man's body. But I would be hard pressed to find any Zeke confessionals that didn't deliver on some front. I feel like funny, insightful, authentic across the board. Very happy to have Zeke here.
One front they maybe don't deliver on is brevity. And this is the thing with Zeke, is that there's no sense of urgency about his confessionals a lot of the time. They can be quite belabored. And I think pithiness is a really underrated quality in confessionals, perhaps even in podcasters, Colin.
Okay.
I mean, hey, I get it. Who am I to be throwing stones from inside the glass house here? The stones are coming from inside the house. But I don't know. I think if you enjoy that kind of confessional, then you're going to love these Zeke-heavy episodes. But if you don't like what Zeke's putting down, you have to sit through a lot of Zeke before you emerge from the other side.
That is fair. And I would also say Millennials versus Gen X may be another season of newbies that has a highly disproportionate number of people who can carry confessionals.
Yeah, you have Adam who can cover the volume, certainly by himself, and then others can do the humor. And so we have a full ensemble, you know, all chiming in.
Well, I feel like Hannah and David Wright are very strong along the way, and they go very far as well. So we'll see if any other Millennials versus Gen X names come off the board. But yeah, we can probably award our official first secondary trophy of the confessional draft, which is kind of like the technical awards or whatever at the Emmys. I think we can safely give loudest confessionalist to Adam Klein.
Does that count as like a dummy prize, a consolation prize? He's
at least on the board. I feel like the work he has put in over the years deserves acknowledgement, at least in the volume department.
Adam was also in attendance at the at the confessional awards. Yeah.
And he's not bad at confessionals by any stretch, no. But I think that is the characteristic of the Adam confessionals.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back over to you.
Okay, so let's move this along here, and I think I'm going to... there's a real face melt of a pick that I want to make here. I don't know if this is the time. I think I can save it for a bit longer. This is me cheating yet again with someone who I don't know if she is a good confessionalist or just I like hearing her talk. Give me Sophie Clark.
Okay. Sophie is certainly a name that came to mind for me, although I would be a bit more reluctant to pick her than I otherwise would, just given the lack of Sophie that we saw on the season that she won, but I absolutely agree that if she were granted more screen time, Sophie would absolutely stand out as an all-time great Survivor confessionalist. And quickly, sorry, I believe I'm firmly on the record in saying that the number one voice you should be listening to as far as Survivor goes is Sophie Clark. Whenever she's on any podcast, she is the person to pay attention to.
That's the thing. She, maybe more so than anyone else on this list, I think manifested a fandom of her own game solely through her confessionals and in the way in which she talks about Survivor, without really any relation to what we saw on the screen for various reasons. And that's, you know, compared to people higher up on this list, for the most part, their games either spoke for themselves or they wouldn't shut up about them. And so you kind of we're going to hear about them eventually. Sophie, I think, you know, if she didn't make the case for her own game, no one else was going to. Right. And so just her being so articulate and being so kind of forthright convinced people of, certainly the viewers among the fan base, of how good her game was before the text itself had even caught up to that, so to speak.
Yes. So no issue whatsoever with me seeing Sophie come off the board here, although I didn't have it in myself to take her this high, but absolutely an enormous fan of whatever Sophie has to say about Survivor, and really wish we could have gotten to see more of that on the show itself. But certainly got plenty of time in Winners at War, and I would say, frankly, an unexpected amount of time just based on how things went on her winning season and how often they would go to her in confessionals there. But very appreciative for that, and looking forward to whenever the next time is that we get to hear Sophie talking Survivor in whatever the context is. Dom, with my next pick, it just feels that, I don't know why I'm taking this person necessarily in this spot, other than it feels like too many names have come off the board without them coming off the board. And I don't, in quickly skimming the others, at least that I have written down here, I have a hard time coming up with one that I feel definitely needs to be selected ahead of Aubrey Bracco, who did certainly get plenty of screen time in Ko Rong, far less so in Game Changers, and then was not around, unfortunately, for a huge amount of Edge of Extinction. But Aubrey, I think, fits pretty much every bill one could be looking for as far as Survivor confessionalists go. It's just, I think, probably a function of playing on a season, like her defining season, a little while ago, and not having the return shots go, at least in the confessional department, as well as they did the first time, potentially diminishing the memory of how stellar Aubrey was in confessionals her first time around. So it felt along the way here like only a matter of time to me until I picked Aubrey, and now apparently is that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back over to you now.
I think that also is part of what people found tragic about her demise in Edge of Extinction, in so much as you can tell when Aubrey has fun. That really shines through in her confessionals. And when maybe she's not having fun, maybe the situation is difficult, but she has time to kind of process that. She's able to articulate that in an interesting way. But when she gets kind of taken off guard and completely blindsided, and she doesn't have time to react to and process that, you kind of see that lifeline for her just kind of just vanish instantly, and that's tough to watch.
Yeah. Okay. So we, I guess I have now made 7 picks, and you have 6. So it's your turn.
All right. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna make the pick that I wanted to make at some point, but it never quite seemed like the time.
Please. Okay. I'm gonna preface this by saying sorry to jump in here. I have a sleeper pick of my own here, and I'm very nervous. Continue.
Okay. Who? Dare I ask who you think my sleeper pick is going to be?
I am not even going to put any names out there into the universe. I desperately need to cling on to the hope that I can still get my person.
All right. Well, here's hoping that your person is the one and only Natalie Cole.
Ooh, it's not Natalie Cole, but that is a very strong pick as far as I'm concerned, and purely a victim of not being on the show long enough. I think if she were getting the same kind of sample size as everyone else, she would have been off the board a long time ago.
Yeah, the first pre-merger, at least in... And is she also the first person who... I guess Chris Doxy only played one season, but he won it, so, you know, scoreboard. But the first pre-merger, and certainly the least actual screen time of anyone on this list. So great that she was able to use that in such a stellar way.
Yeah, I feel like everybody that is listening to the Dom and Colin podcast in the year 2021, when Survivor hasn't been on for a while, other than probably casual Anna, knows who Natalie Cole is and fully understands this pick. And I believe it is the case that I saw recently that she wasn't too thrilled. And actually, I think by recently, I mean like the David versus Goliath reunion, that she wasn't too thrilled with how she was portrayed on TV. I don't know that Natalie is someone, unfortunately, that we are too likely to see back in the future, but I would of course be 100% here for that. As I'm sure great friend of the podcast, Brian Scally would be as well. He is the number one Natalie stan, as far as I'm concerned. And sidebar, if anyone is unaware of this, we certainly don't say this nearly enough because I always forget to promote pretty much anything. But Matt and Scally doing outstanding challenge coverage, now double dipping the challenge. There is currently the season airing on MTV as well as the Challenge All-Stars airing on Paramount Plus, and they have been hitting both of those, and very much appreciate what those two have been up to in that respect, and also what they're up to on Twitter and everywhere else. But don't say that nearly enough. Be for sure checking out what Matt and Scally have going on in the challenge world, if you are missing that. But there goes Natalie Cole, unfortunately. Although my sleeper pick does still remain safe. Dom, man, three picks to go. And now I got to worry about playing this tactically and not running out of time and forgetting people. I think at this point, and now I'm taking this to an even, unfortunately, deeper slash sadder level of trying to figure out who you might be more likely to pick going forward. I think I got to keep at this point the nerd ball rolling here on my team. I don't know if this is necessarily going to be the most popular pick, but as far as people that I could genuinely listen to talk about pretty much anything, I feel we're at the point where I would be remiss not to be taking Christian Hubicki, Dr. Christian Hubicki, off the board here. I know he's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but the enthusiasm, the authenticity, the insight, and the comedy that I feel like he brought to, or at least attempted to bring, and I feel did so very successfully to all of his confessionals during David versus Goliath, and is incidentally very good on RHAP. I always look forward to whenever he's on. I feel like the time has come, and I would be nervous about him going over to your team. So I will take Christian
Did not need to be nervous about that. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, apparently Dom is someone who is not the biggest Christian fan. It sounds
I love the guy. I'm just saying, are his confessionals insightful, or does he just wear glasses and use words like algorithm a lot? Like, let's be honest with ourselves here.
Is there a difference, Dom? I feel like insight is just wearing glasses and using the word algorithm a lot. No, maybe I'm just being completely bamboozled by his incredible vernacular. I know that's something to do with language. What word am I looking for his
vocabulary?
Ability? Sure, fine. I was trying to go a little higher level than that, but we'll take it. I am personally, and again, this is my team, so I'm going to do it. Very happy to have Christian here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back over to you.
Okay, so I need how many more people?
You need three more people. I need two more people. And I've kind of boxed myself into a corner here, but we'll roll with it.
Yeah, I think I maybe used my trump card too early here, you know, springing Natalie Cole on you, and now I'm lost. I don't know where to
You better be able to follow this up with three absolute face melters.
Okay, let's do that then. So following up Natalie Cole, give me Dina Bennett, someone else who I think definitely deserved a second appearance on the show and really made their most of their first, certainly in terms of confessionals, if not in the game.
I am fully on board with that. I think she is someone often cited as kind of a person lost to history who would have been a fantastic returnee candidate if things had played out slightly differently in terms of when she timed her original season, which was not obviously not up to her. Yeah, I fully down with Dina coming off the board here. I suspect she is someone that most people hearing us right now remember and probably fondly, but in case it's been a little while since you've seen Survivor the Amazon, I would imagine Dina will be someone, whenever you rewatch it, who will stand out, and this will pick will, whenever that happens, make more sense to you there. But yeah, totally down with Dina here as your number 8 pick. And honestly, I'm perhaps very foolishly, but still doing it, holding out hope that if we do get a second chance to, which I think would be an excellent decision by the producers, a massive pool of players from which to choose that I think are in the kind of Dina mold, I don't think it's impossible that Dina is the next version of, like, Kimmy Kappenberg, who we never thought it was conceivable that they would come back on a season of Survivor after this much time has passed, but apparently that sort of thing can still happen. So I would guess Dina would be high up on many people's lists who remember her from her first time.
Dina turning into Kimmy Kappenberg would be quite the hard turn, I'll say that much, but in other respects, certainly. Would love to see her follow that same timeline.
Okay, so with my penultimate pick here, I know, and I'm going to be so mad if you somehow snipe my sleeper pick that I'm planning on taking with number 10.
Was it Kenny Wentworth?
No, it's not. Yeah, okay, well. No one would see that coming, Dom. That would be an easy one to sneak past you. This is painful because there's so many excellent names still on the board here. As far as I'm concerned, I think with my 9th pick, I will go for, oh man, sorry to hem and haw and go this deep into the tank here. I think I'm going to go for one of the OGs. I do not know if this player had come along in a more modern season, how well they would have been received. But when thinking about just the all-time great confessionals and who's got a bunch of classic memorable confessionals, I honestly don't know how much they would have stood out any time after Borneo, but they were on Borneo, and I think they were a big piece of why Borneo was so memorable in the first place and why Survivor is still around. Dom, with my 9th overall pick, Rudy Bosch coming on board here.
I actually like that pick a lot.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. If I redeemed myself after my last string of horrible picks, as far as you're concerned?
It's going to take a few more good ones yet, but we'll see.
Okay, I was torn between a couple of different people here. Frankly, I was strongly considering Sue Hawk, who I think fits a lot of that same criteria, who was just so raw and so authentic, and I'm really not sure if they even would have been into presenting someone that way certainly anytime relatively recently, if not a decade plus ago. But obviously one of the defining characters in the course of Survivor here, both Sue and Rudy. But Rudy, I believe, is going to be the 9th pick here on my team. So back over to you for your number 9 pick.
I think I am actually going to take Sue Hawk. Yeah,
okay.
What?
I feel like I should get partial credit for that, but that's not...
What? You want me to send you like a timestamp photograph of my board before we started this, or what do you want from me?
Actually, the better line here would be to be like, oh, that's a horrible pick. I just baited you into taking Sue Hawk, and now you've fallen right into my trap. But no, completely understandable pick for sure.
Yeah, I think Sue, that original trifecta of Hatch and Rudy this time, and Sue, again, I don't know if Hatch is going to be the pick who kind of completes all this and rounds us out in, you know, perfect bookending fashion. But all three of them, I think the fact that they were so good at conveying who they were in every sense of the word made Borneo what it was. And, you know, people like to say if Kelly had gone on to win, then maybe Survivor history is completely different from there. And I think that's true in terms of how cutthroat people would view the game as, and, you know, in many other ways, you know, how deserving you think Hatch was versus how deserving you think Kelly was, but also just in terms of the star power, right? Like, Hatch, for better or for worse, in many cases, he's a memorable character. He is a big personality. Kelly Wigglesworth is not. And, you know, the fact that you had Hatch and Rudy and Sue just carrying so much of that Targi 4 storyline, I think really helped to cement that season as not just the best season, but or not just the iconic first season, but as the first season. I don't know how much longer the show crawls on for if it doesn't get off on that note.
I am totally with that. So Sue Hawk, I think very fairly coming off the board here in the number 9 slot. And I will now reveal, Dom, when torn between Rudy and Sue, I ended up going for Rudy because of this last pick that I thankfully am going to be able to make without you sniping this person away from me. I will, first of all, cop to this potentially being some recency bias that, I don't know, if we were doing this draft 10 years from now, how quickly this person would come to mind. But I think there is someone who, in a recent season, really made a name for herself almost exclusively through confessionals, because she was not really in the game for that long, but did get to continue participating on the show. With my last overall pick here in the draft, dude, I'm taking Reem Daly, and I'm going to wow. win the draft with that pick.
Was not expecting it, but I love it.
Okay. I hope people out there love it as well. I think Reem, the confessionalist, kind of speaks for herself, really bringing the heat and bringing the authenticity and bringing the laughs. And so thrilled that, first of all, I was able to make it through this point without you sniping her away from me. And second of all, just happy to have her on my team for sure here. So that is going to round out my squad here, Dom. And it is now back on you with the final pick in the draft.
Okay. This is a somewhat more adventurous pick to round things out. Give me Maine's own Dan Foley, because, and let me please justify myself here, I feel like if confessionals are a way to make yourself known to the viewing audience, I can think of no one who did a better job showing why people found them so fucking irritating as Dan Foley did in his confessionals. Like, you really got the essence of the man and why he was so obnoxious to his castmates and also to the viewing public as a whole.
Okay, I was very nervous that this was a pretty tight race along the way here, but I think I have now, if Reem didn't put me over the top, Dan now for sure has. I am the winner of this draft. I certainly get what you're saying, but in terms of all-time best confessionalist, we're not talking about most memorable or people who make it the easiest to see why people view them the way they do. Dan, I do not know if that is a pick that is going to resonate with a huge number of people.
What I'm saying is, now that this is like the whole elephant thing, right? Now that I have mentioned the name Dan Foley, you are hearing his voice just blaring through your eardrums. And I feel like that is one defining feature of many of these top confessionalists, is just their voice, their instrument with which they, you know, give rise to their confessionals has a memorable quality to it. And Dan Foley's surely does.
So let me just run through now, Dom, some of the names that did not come off the board that you just chose Dan Foley ahead of. You just, in an all-time great confessionalist draft, you just chose Dan Foley ahead of the aforementioned Malcolm. You chose Dan Foley ahead of Cochran, Kathy Vavrick O'Brien, Corinne Kaplan, David Wright, Davey Rickenbacker, Eliza Orleans, Richard Hatch, Michaela Bradshaw, Randy Bailey, all of these people you just left off the table and took Dan Foley, just for your own information.
Sure did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the true Edgelord of Extinction, indeed, a classic Dom Harvey kind of way to wrap up this draft, but I feel very confident that I have now cemented myself as the winner. But to quickly recap and roll through the teams one final time, maybe others will disagree. Let us know, I suppose. There isn't a comment section, but on Twitter, if whatever. But here are your final rosters. On Team Colin, the winning team, we have Ceree, Tyson, Sandra, Rob Sesternino, Parvati, Zeke, Aubrey, Christian, Rudy, and Reem. Over on Team Dom, we have Coach, Penner, Courtney, Chris Doherty, Colby, Sophie, Natalie Cole, Dina Bennett, Sue Hawk, and Dan Foley. So, hearing all of these names in succession, I feel like this was a casual Anna Thinks-esque shellacking, and I feel like I have now evened the score here with you.
Well, we'll see what the people have to say about that.
Okay. Dom, anything else that you wanted to get to? I can't believe, honestly, how long this took, but I felt like this was a very good time.
I am not remotely surprised in the slightest.
I guess, you're right. I probably shouldn't be after all of these years, but I believe that is finally going to do it here for the great confessional draft of 2021. Thank you guys for sticking with us this long. As mentioned, perhaps once or twice over the course of this podcast, bonus episodes going up every week over at patreon.com/Dom and Colin. $5 a month, an extra episode every week. Find us over there. If you would like more of this high quality content, like Dan Foley being picked in the all-time greatest confessionals draft, you just wait till you see what's behind the paywall there. But that is going to do it. He's, of course, on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. If you would like to tweet at me and tell me what a great job I did, we will talk to you guys next week. Take care, everybody.